This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, powered by the Family Research Council, your embassy of faith, family, and freedom in the heart of our nation's capital. Now, here's your host, FRC President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Monday edition, what's cooking on the left? Is there an all-out effort to kind of shame evangelicals into returning to the shadows of the culture like their fundamentalist forebearers did over 100 years ago? We'll talk about that on this edition of Washington Watch. Also, lawmakers in Maryland think they know better than homeschool parents what's best for their kids. Now, this is something you've got to be on the watch for. More and more state legislatures, after we saw a recent incident in California, an anomaly, but nonetheless, lawmakers now wanting to come into homes and monitor what parents are teaching their kids. J.P. Duffy, Vice President of Communications and a homeschool dad in Maryland, will join me later here on Washington Watch. Also, we'll be taking your phone calls today on this Monday edition. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. And pastors, let me remind you, coming up in May, I'm going to have more information about this. It's all coming together, our annual Watchman on the Wall Pastors Conference here in Washington, D.C. Great event, and so stay tuned. More information about that coming, but you can go ahead and register now, watchmanevents.org. Great place to be last week in May. Okay, Michael Gerson, who he was actually a speechwriter for George W. Bush and self-proclaimed evangelical. But in recent years, he makes his living. He writes for The Washington Post, but passes his time attacking evangelicals. He had a lengthy piece in The Atlantic. I don't expect that you probably read it. This is really kind of aimed at the choir of the left. And I'm sure you probably did not see his interview on Face the Nation yesterday because most of you were probably in church. So I'm really not, this is not so much focused on Michael Gerson as it is to expect more of this. And I'm going to tell you what's behind it. And so I've got this clip from him yesterday. Now, they had him on because of this this piece that he wrote in The Atlantic called The Last Temptation, How Evangelicals, Once Culturally Confident, Became an Anxious Minority Seeking Political Protection from the Least Traditionally Religious President in Living Memory. All right, so here's a clip of what he had to say yesterday morning.
I think that it is it's the height of hypocrisy, and we saw it with Roy Moore as well. If any other Democratic president had been guilty of what is alleged in these cases, evangelicals would be, you know, off the reservation. This is a case where their morality seems to be determined by their politics. And they've ceased to be moral leaders in that sense. You know, it was a tough choice for many evangelicals between Hillary Clinton and the president. And I understand that. But they have been the most sycophantic element of the Republican coalition, which is unnecessary. They have not provided that moral judgment that I think leavens our politics or should leaven our politics. And so I've done this piece in The Atlantic as essentially arguing that they're betraying a great tradition. Evangelicalism really has had a good tradition, and now they're really undermining that reputation of their faith.
But in that judgment, you're saying the transactional part of this relationship isn't worth the trade-off?
Well, they're acting like, slimy political operatives, not moral leaders. They're essentially saying in order to get benefits for themselves in a certain way, they talk about religious liberty and other issues, but to get benefits for themselves, they're willing to wink at Stormy Daniels and wink at misogyny and wink at nativism. And that, I think, is deeply discrediting, not just in a political sense, mm-hmm. but actually in a moral and religious sense.
I don't even know where to start. First off, I want to know what evangelical leaders are getting personal benefits, because I want to find out about that. That's the first I've heard of that. What I have found is that evangelicals from from every level of political appointment have been found in this administration. I don't want to put a percentage on it, but I can tell you this, a whole lot more than what they were found in the George W. Bush administration. And the policies that have come forth have been extraordinary. Now, I want to go back. I want to address some of this because you're going to hear this, okay? You're going to hear this repeatedly in the media over the next, I think you're probably going to hear it for the rest of his term, but you're certainly going to hear it going into this midterm election. This is designed to really shame evangelicals. Of course, Face the Nation is giving a platform to, you know, Gerson and any other Republican who will, in name, will bash a element of the population, the voting population, that has been very instrumental in the president being successful in getting into office and maintaining and continuing his policy, his agenda. So they're going to give a platform because this is designed to shame these evangelicals into a corner, into the corners of society, in the recesses of society, where they'll be quiet. They won't be involved. It's like I made reference at the beginning of the fundamentalist. Who, you know, after the big debate over evolution and Darwinism, they basically retreated from public engagement. And it was a long time before they came back. And it was really kind of, when evangelicalism became mainstream, really in the 50s. And I made this comment in the last few weeks. Billy Graham kind of rode his coattails into further engagement. Now, they weren't all, cheerleaders for Billy Graham. They thought he had compromised on some things, but that's another story. But there's a design here, okay? I want you to know what the design is. The design is to try to say that evangelicals who supported Donald Trump should feel bad. Now, in this piece, and I want to address this once again, I want to address this because you're likely to hear it, and I want you to be equipped and able to respond. Okay, that's what this is about. They, and this is in the news with this Stormy Daniels, and so he writes about this in the Atlantic piece, and I'm going to quote him. After reports emerged that Trump's lawyer paid hush money to the porn star Stormy Daniels to cover up their alleged sexual encounter, Graham vouched for Trump's concern for Christian values. He's referring to Franklin. Then it goes on. Tony Perkins, the president of the Family Research Council, argued that Trump should be given a mulligan for his past infidelity. One can only imagine the explosion of outrage if President Barack Obama had been credibly accused of similar offenses, end quote. Okay. Let me encourage Mr. Gerson to actually read the transcript of what that comment came from, instead of watching MSNBC. And I was asked why evangelicals supported Donald Trump because of his past behavior, including things like Stormy Daniels. It's because when it came down to a choice between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, who I do give, I do agree with Gerson that he was the most unlikely champion of evangelical values. I agree. That's why I did not support him in the primary. And that's why at the end of this past year, in December, November, December, when George Barna did a poll of what's called SageCons, the spiritually active, governmentally engaged Christians, 20 million of them, 51% said they were surprised by the president, or rather that the president exceeded their expectations in his first year in office. we're all surprised. He was the most unlikely candidate to do this. But when it came down to Hillary Clinton and him, he wrapped himself in conservative values, the conservative party platform. And guess what? To this point, he has followed through. None of this behavior that I don't know if it's true or not. There's enough out there that it is all problematic from his past. No one's giving him a pass on that. What we're saying, when it came to a political choice between him and Hillary Clinton, and he promised to do A, B, and C, what would they have us do? I know what they would have us do. They would have had us stay at home and allow Hillary Clinton to be the president. And I will allow your imagination to lead you where this nation would be today if that were the case. And it would not be pretty. It would not. So, since the election, and evangelicals supported him in overwhelming numbers, which Gerson acknowledges that even more so than Ronald Reagan, they voted for Donald Trump. In part, I would say, it's because of how bad it was under Barack Obama and a recognition that elections do have consequences when people were being forced under the penalty of law to jettison their moral, biblically based beliefs all across society. When members of the military were punished for their religious, orthodox religious beliefs, they did vote. And they voted for someone who said he was going to protect them. There was a desperation, and I think a recognition, that we were about to lose our republic. So, what has he done since he was elected? Well, number one, to the best of my knowledge and based on my conversations with people in the White House, he has not engaged in any of the immoral behavior that is alleged to have happened a decade ago. All right, so nothing has changed in that category since he is president. And believe me, we don't explain away any of that behavior as being acceptable. It's abhorrent. It's wrong. It's immoral. And I pray to God that he has repented completely of that. But secondly, what has he done in terms of policy? All right? We're going to talk about that when we come back. An unusual Washington Watch, but these are some things that you really need to know, because you're going to hear more about this in the days ahead. And it's all designed to keep, to really discourage you and to keep you from being involved. You cannot grow weary in well-doing, right? Your participation in the world around you is making a difference. Christians around the world are being protected because we have a president who cares about religious freedom. All right, we're going to continue this conversation. Still to come, we're going to be talking with J.P. Duffy about lawmakers in Maryland wanting to visit the homes of homeschoolers. That's coming up a little later. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, taking a little different track today. I normally don't do this. I normally allow my guests to drive the program, and I just want to bring you the newsmakers and interview them and let them kind of give you a front seat view of what's happening here in our nation's capital. But I want to address this because it's the intensity of this is growing. And this is an effort to shame evangelicals for their political participation. And since I've spent the last 25 years since I left, you know, the law enforcement realm and entered into the political realm, both in activism and in public office, is to bring Christians to an understanding of what our role is. And our role is to be salt and light. Now, first and foremost, that is to take the gospel to people, living it out. And you know, the Great Commission, Matthew 28, Jesus says, go therefore and make disciples, baptizing in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Go therefore. And that's, you know, some would describe that as lifestyle evangelism. I think sometimes that means we don't talk about Jesus. We just live. I don't think that's what it should be. We should talk about Jesus. But we should live out our faith no matter what our vocation is, no matter where we work. We should be free to. And for most of the history of this country, the 4 years, we have been free to do so. But in the last 8 years, increasingly, we've seen, well, it's been longer than that, really been the last 50, but with intensity in the last 8 years, we've not been able to do that. And so, I want to applaud many of you, and I've heard from many of you who've, you know, called in over the last year and said, you know what, I've never voted before, but I realize what's at stake, and so I've registered, and I'm voting, or I voted. And I want to say there's been a return already on your engagement. This administration, again, I don't vouch for what the president did prior to stepping into office, nor do I condone it. But he made a deal with evangelicals to embrace a biblically, probably the most biblically aligned platform the party's ever had, and he's been doing it. I mean, look, within 72 hours, not only did he reinstitute the Mexico City policy, which originated with Ronald Reagan, and it was called Mexico City because he announced it in Mexico City, saying that taxpayer dollars would not be used to fund abortion around the globe. Well, not only did he reinstate that, but he expanded it to cover more foreign dollars or money going into foreign policy. New Conscience and Religious Freedom Division in the Department of HHS, in the Office of Civil Rights. That department, which is the home of the HHS mandate, contraceptive abortifacient mandate, which went all the way to the Supreme Court with the Hobby Lobby case, that department, that agency, which has long been a thorn in the side of evangelicals, has done almost a 180. And there are many evangelicals working in that agency. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which is greatly reduced the marriage penalties, boosting child tax credit, moving the embassy from to Jerusalem and Israel. I mean, look, that's been on the books for 25 years, and no president had the courage to do it. And that's important to a lot of evangelicals because it moves us in alignment with Scripture. The USDA put out a directive on religious liberty because meat packers were being penalized for their faith under the Obama administration. The Trump administration directly addressed the needs of Christians in the Middle East, addressing this area that's been the target of genocide that the previous administration didn't even want to acknowledge until after the United Nations did it. Directed the Department of Justice to tell all federal agencies to respect religious freedom. The nomination of good judges. I give him an A-plus on judges. Neil Gorsuch, for one, at the Supreme Court. And the appellate court level, just the same. In fact, 12 circuit court judges this past year. The president reversed the transgender policy in the military that Obama put in place on the way out the door. President Trump cut off funding for the United Nations Population Fund, which supports China's forced abortion and sterilization program. The religious liberty EO, which I made reference to earlier. He reversed Obama's shower and bathroom policy. He endorsed the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. He withdrew the United States from the Paris Climate Agreement. Let me take, and this is not, I'm not slamming George W. Bush, okay? I'm not. But let me just tell you how reluctant they were in that administration to do this stuff. I remember being in Honduras on a mission trip on a satellite phone, talking with his chief of staff, trying to get them to put in place a previous policy that on Title X funding, which is family planning, that Ronald Reagan had that said you couldn't do abortions and family planning under the same roof. Because it was, money's fungible. The Bush administration was afraid to do that because the media would have criticized them. Folks, you have no reason to be ashamed of supporting this president. He has kept his promises, and as long as he continues to keep those promises and he continues to conduct himself in a way that is in keeping with the office, you know, if he were to engage in behavior like Bill Clinton, we're out of here. That support would evaporate quickly. We're not making any excuses for what he has done. But what he is doing right now is keeping his promise, and so nothing has changed. And the left is going to continually roll out, you know, people to shame evangelicals to try to get you to stay home, to retreat from society and not be involved politically. Folks, Christians around the world have been dying because of the neglect of our government. That's changing, and that's because you're involved. Don't stop now. All right, when we come back, J.P. Duffy, Vice President of Communications, here to talk about Maryland lawmakers wanting to poke their heads in the homes of homeschoolers. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay. Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue. If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. Folks, hold on. We're going to go to the phones in the next segment. I've got a phone call, the phone lines, folks holding on the phone lines. Don't go away. We're taking your calls next. But I wanted to address this issue. The state of Maryland, the Maryland legislature, had a... I can only describe it as an anti-homeschooling bill. Now, not all parents homeschool for religious purposes. Some for academic reasons, and increasingly, what's interesting, what's probably the largest number percentage-wise that are now beginning to homeschool is for security reasons, because our schools are so become dangerous, and so more and more parents are choosing the option of homeschooling. And it's, we've, full disclosure, we have homeschooled, my wife has homeschooled all five of our children. And it's a great option. It just really is. But so full disclosure, I'm a homeschool advocate, but I know from my days in the legislature, and I know from tracking this issue, and by the way, Homeschool Legal Defense, an organization that does a great job in tracking these things. I used to work with them when I was in the legislature. You get these do-gooder legislators who think that this, well, they're conditioned with this idea that the government knows better than parents what their children need. And you may have seen this. It's been a couple of months ago out in California, that just one of these horrific stories of a family that, quote unquote, homeschooled, and they abused their kids. They kept them locked in their room. Even I think some of them were handcuffed or chained to their bed. I mean, it's horrible. And so now you get these lawmakers across the country wanting to interject themselves into homeschool families. And in Maryland in particular, they were calling for the state to come in twice a year and see what's happening in the home. Joining us now with more on this, the Vice President of Communications at the Family Research Council, J.P. Duffy, also a homeschool dad in the state of Maryland. J.P., welcome to Washington Watch.
Great to be here, Tony.
All right. So explain a little bit more about what this measure would have done. We just got word that the author of the bill withdrew it, I think, because of the opposition and the pressure. But people need to know what lawmakers are up to. What would this bill have done?
Well, it was shocking. I mean, it really was. It was beyond anything that I've ever seen that's come out of even the Maryland legislature. But it would have required the state to conduct two investigations a year into every homeschool family in the state. And I'll keep in mind there are 25,000 homeschool families in the state of Maryland at least. So we're talking about 50,000 state investigations where literally they would come into the home and spend the day watching and observing. And you would think, well, they're there to make sure that they're getting a proper education. And the bill makes it very clear that that's not the goal. It actually goes into an incredible amount of detail as to what the representative is to do once he enters the home. He is to be looking for signs of neglect, abuse, and going down the list of what it might be, because in Maryland, as a homeschool family, we're already reviewed twice a year, having our curriculum and our portfolio of schoolwork is already reviewed. So this is on top of what we're already dealing with, which is that's offside. That doesn't mean no one's coming into our home currently, but this would make Maryland the first and the only state in the country that would allow something like this. There were a few attempts back in the 1980s where states wanted to go in and engage in home visitations, and the courts rejected that as a violation of the Fourth Amendment.
So the author of this apparently getting pushback, and so withdrawing this bill?
Well, it was incredible to see the response to it. The alert went out from Homeschool Legal Defense Association on Friday afternoon, and through the weekend, homeschool families began organizing themselves online on Facebook through various groups. They began organizing online petitions. They began even trying to find out where legislators might be over the weekend, chasing them down at events, so to speak, and talking to them. And
schooling them, so to speak.
Right, and we saw one of the legislators pull their name off the bill. He posted something on Facebook saying, I don't want to be a part of this bill any longer. And then by this morning, the phone calls began pouring into the various offices. And by mid-afternoon today, the author of the bill said, okay, I've had enough, and he withdrew the bill and included a cryptic response saying that he hoped that in a future session that homeschooling regulations would be addressed.
Well, good. Homeschoolers, I have found, more than most evangelical conservative families, understand the importance of the political process and policy. JP, thanks so much for that update. Appreciate you keeping your finger on that pulse.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, JP Duffy, Vice President of Communications at Family Research Council. Always tracking these things. You know, I just wonder if they're going to invite themselves over for dinner as well. Kind of reminds me of the Third Amendment to the Constitution about quartering soldiers. No end to what these folks might do. All right, when we come back, we're going to the phone lines. 866-372-7234. Next on Washington Watch. Don't...
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, That's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. So if you want to keep up with me and some of my thoughts on things, join me on Twitter, at T Perkins. Share it with your friends. Also, if you're not already getting my daily update, which our team puts together each and every day, Monday through Friday, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Sign up for that. It's a great resource, free. Comes in your inbox and keeps you posted on what's happening. All right, 866-372-7234. This is what we're going to talk about. I want these two topics, either one you want to talk about. This push on homeschooling, you know, the government trying to regulate constant. Maybe you've got a story there. Maybe something's happening in your state. You need to alert others. Give me a call. And then also, we're talking about the Trump administration. And as evangelicals, as Christians, as conservatives, do you see what's going on, where the left is trying to shame evangelicals into disengaging? And do you know what the outcome of that would be? Or do you disagree? Do you think evangelicals shouldn't be supporting this administration? I'm not sure what the alternative is, but you're free to suggest one. 866-372-7234. We're going to Ron in Columbus, Ohio. Ron, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. I wanted to make two comments about Michael Gerson. He obviously hasn't spent any time studying, you know, the Bible, or he'd know all the stories of God using flawed individuals from, David and his son Solomon, especially when it comes to the carnal side there.
Well, there's there's probably not one that's not flawed. I mean, Moses was a murderer. Go down the list. Go down the list.
But I always felt, especially since I fell asleep election night and woke up to the news in the morning, I had just a tremendous sense of God working in this because of the prayers, fervent prayers, as it says, about this election that may have been unprecedented. I don't know of a time when I felt that the nation was praying in earnest for the outcome of this election, and I really felt like it was a movement of God. And until we see otherwise, I'm going to continue feeling that way. Now, for some reason, that same thing did not seem to happen with Judge Roy Moore. I was of the opinion that, okay, if he's really repented, and this was 30 or 40 years ago, and this is a godly man at this present time, you know, I thought the evangelicals would rise up and make that happen. For some reason, it didn't. We may never know why not. But that was my comment. Thanks so much, Tony.
Hey, Ron, thank you for the call. And several points there that you made that I think are on the money. Number one, I think that the outcome of this election was the result of prayer, God intervening in the most unlikely way. No one would have thought that Donald Trump would have been a champion for these things. I never thought it. I didn't. I was hoping, I mean, I just knew it was going to be better than the alternative, and I was hoping for the best. But I saw signs that made me, that suggested that this guy's different. The fact that he put out the list of 11 potential judicial nominees, and he called them pro-life. No Republican had ever done that. George W. Bush had never done that. They wouldn't use the term pro-life. In fact, they said, we're not going to have a litmus test. That didn't stop Donald Trump. And then he picked Mike Pence. And then he embraced the party platform, which, as I've said before, I've, all the way back to George W. Bush, I've had to fight each campaign on various aspects of the platform, with the exception of Donald Trump. His campaign did not fight us. They actually helped us. So, Ron, I think you are absolutely you are correct. Now, on the thing with Judge Moore, now, I talked to him, and he completely categorically denied those things. I don't know. I just don't know in that situation. I think maybe, I just don't know. But this I do know, that Donald Trump has kept his commitment. And look, because you support him, as he became president in January of last year, or you voted for him in November of 2016, that in no way, okay, no way, in no form or fashion, is an endorsement or of past behavior that he engaged in. All right, so this is what they're trying to do, is shame evangelicals and say, well, you support this president. Do you know what he did 10 years ago? Do you know what he did 15 years ago? Do you know what he did 5 years ago? No, I'm pretty certain. I don't want to know. I mean, I do know. But, I mean, it's not stuff I want to know the details, because that's why I didn't support him in the primary. As long as we had, you know, other godly candidates who more aligned with biblical values that I embrace and want to live by, then I supported them. But as it came down to it, this is the choice we had. And again, I want to applaud you as, you know, being a little more complex than the left would give you credit for. As the Washington Post, which Gerson works for, by the way, Gerson was a never-Trumper, okay? So part of his problem is he can't admit that he was wrong. And that's the problem that many of these never-Trumpers, now some, to their credit, have come over and said, you know what, I'm surprised. He's actually done what he said he was going to do. So still don't like everything about him, but I have to give him credit. Gerson can't do that. Gerson is never-Trumper. You know, who knows who he was supporting? I don't know. But he just can't. He can't bring himself to acknowledge that he was wrong. Anyway, all right. I'm going to keep going here. But I want to go to the phone lines. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Anna in Virginia. Anna, welcome to Washington Watch. Go ahead, Anna.
Hi. Yes, I just wanted to say that I voted for Trump myself. But I had to be very prayerful about it because I was very torn. I didn't think either candidate was good, but I wanted to vote. I felt that was something that God wanted me to do, and I just prayed that God would guide my hand to the right checkbox, and I believe he did. It was rather a simple choice. I felt someone questioning me. Would you rather vote for somebody who's going to kill babies or save babies?
So, Anna, let me ask you this question, okay? 14 mm-hmm. months after he's taken office, would you vote for him again?
Given the same choices, without a doubt, and it would have been an easier vote, knowing everything that he actually kept his promises.
Mm-hmm.
Without a doubt, I would vote for him again.
So those in the media have not shamed you into withdrawing your support for the president?
Oh, no. If anything, they've just helped to enforce my my support for the president. I don't care for all of his policies. I don't agree with what he's done, like very similar to what you guys have said. But, again, given the choices, Hillary Clinton and her camp, or Trump and what he's doing, supporting the evangelical cause, or supporting God's cause, you know, keeping babies, you know, hopefully from being aborted. And, without a doubt, it's given the two camps, I would continue to support Trump.
All right. Anna, thanks so much.
We did not elect a preacher into the Oval Office. We elected a president based on what the promises that he that he gave.
All right, Anna. Thanks so much for the call and for the candor. You know, and I am troubled. I mean, I want to have a president who is, morally aligned with Scripture, and I actually see this president as moving in the right direction. He clearly was not there given his past, but as Anna said, it was look at the choice we had. I'll just say that this president, and as soon as he deviates, believe me, you'll hear it. And I've made that very clear to this administration. I am with them as long as they're headed in the right direction, and I will communicate and talk to them if I see things that are deviating. But we do have to realize, as Anna said, and I know that kind of some people interpret that the wrong way. We didn't elect a preacher; we elected a president. That essentially saying that. This is the political realm. It's not going to be perfectly aligned with everything we would like to see. I think we have to work to get it that way, and we're in the process. But if we step back and take our hands off, believe me, it goes south quickly, quickly. All right, let's go to Jim in Missouri. Jim, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yeah, I want to thank you for what you do. My first thought is he without sin cast the first stone, and there's a lot of people that's pointing fingers that's got three more pointing back at them.
True, we all do that. Now, I would say, Jim, thanks so much for that, because I think it's a reminder of the judgmental nature. Now, I do think we have to use discernment. The Lord Jesus himself told us to judge ourselves, but also to be discerning. And I do think, and I made this point during the election when we're in the primary, that for those that were supporting Trump early, I had a problem with that. Because when you look at biblical guidelines for leadership, he didn't measure up, okay? He didn't. But came down to it, and I'll admit he has exceeded expectations. I'm glad I supported him in the general election. God, he uses people. He uses flawed people. Now, I want to make clear, because the left, they want to say, you're giving him a pass on him. No, if he were to engage in the same stuff that Clinton did, we would react in the same way in office. And I've communicated that. It's clear. So, Jim, what you're saying is that past is past. But when you choose to live in a lifestyle of something, that's when we have to draw the line and say, no, we can't continue in that. And that's what Jesus said when he made that statement. He without sin cast the first stone, and he looked at her and said, where are your accusers? She said, they're all gone. He said, well, neither do I accuse you. Go and, what did he say? Sin no more. Jim, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening to Washington Watch. All right, let's go to Texas, where Deborah is on the line. Deborah, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say a total agreement with your last caller. I wouldn't want anybody poking around my life 10 years ago either and drudging up what I did before I knew Christ. And we don't know, you know, when, if he saved or if he just, you know, been under good religious, good godly influence that's changed his heart. But in any case, we need to judge him by his current actions. The other thing I wanted to say is I'm really hoping that everyone on AFR, and I've talked to most of the radio hosts, please be aware of who they're going to put up against him. I really believe that if, what's her name? Drawing a blank on her name now.
Oprah Winfrey?
Her name. Oprah Winfrey. If she runs for president, everybody is going to come up and say she is such a godly woman. Not only is she a Christian, but she's a woman. How can you possibly vote for him against her? Because we went from Hillary Clinton to Oprah Winfrey. And I really hope that everybody will go out there and do their research on what it is that she truly believes. Because she's not been hiding what she believes. She's been publicizing what she truly believes. And it is not according to Scripture at all.
Deborah, thanks so
much.
Yeah, we're up against a break, and I want to address that because you brought up some excellent points, Deborah. She said, judge him by his current actions. That is right on target. We will judge this president by his current actions. And how do we, when it comes to a choice, all right, between, and I'm going to use this example that she put out there, Oprah. Okay, who can know a man's heart? Scripture makes it very clear. We can't. We can't even know our own heart if it weren't for the Holy Spirit leading us to understand it. We can't know a man's heart, but we can know their actions. And so we will judge him by his actions and the policies. That's what happens when you step into the public policy arena. It's the policies. What kind of policies would Oprah promote? Well, we know that she supported Barack Obama and his anti-life policies, his anti-Christian freedom policies. Anyway, sorry we didn't get to all the calls. There are some interesting, thoughtful comments. But folks, look, do not grow weary in well-doing. Pray for this president. Judge him by his current actions. Great insight, Deborah. And by all means, stay involved. Don't allow the left to shame you and cause you to retreat from being involved, whether it's in a local election, a state election, or a national election. All right, remember, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, well, it's just what I was saying. Just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. Again, that's 1-866-372-7234.